Hi, everybody. This is Tracy, and I have got another special guest for you. I know you've heard that before, but I've got Dr. Kate Dow. She is a survivor. She is a psychologist, and she is a coach. And we're going to talk today about the duality of being abused at home and going to work and putting your emotions, like, you don't want the work people to know that you're being abused and the cray cray is going on. Maybe you're going through the bad divorce, or they've just done something horrific to you, and then you have to go to work. You put on the suit. Let's hope it's not a pantsuit. Just kidding. But you put on this face and you go to work, and you have to pretend it's right. You have to pretend that life is not cray cray. And Dr. Kate is going to talk to us today and give us some insight in that. And we're going to kind of like go off topic too. So there's going to be some good stuff. I'm not telling you. It's a secret. So you've got to watch it. And if you haven't subscribed to my channel yet, I better ask now because I never do. So there you go. Thank you.
Thank you, Tracy. I'm really glad to be here myself.
Yeah. So what I want to talk about with you today is you are a psychologist.
Yes.
You have also been a survivor.
So
do you want to tell us a little bit about your narcissist?
Sure.
Or your ex-narcissist. Let's not call him that.
Right. My ex-narcissist. Yes, he was my ex-husband. And the question I get asked a lot is, if you're a psychologist, how come you didn't see that and understand that was what was going on for him? And I think that's the trickiest part about personality disorders like that, is that you can think you know it, but until you're in it and you're engaged in it and you're already somewhat invested in the relationship, you start to only see the things that you want to see, and you start taking on responsibility for why things aren't going well, right? Mm-hmm. So that's what we do. And I was raised a pretty good little people pleaser, so that set me up to be a good target. And so I met him 20 years ago, and I was very much wanting to have children and get married. And so it just seemed like it was a possibility there, even though as I started to see his bad behavior, I was thinking, well, this will be no big deal. Like, if we can't make it, we won't make it, and I'll leave, right? Not having any clue of what it really was going to end up being. And it just progressed every time we went towards the next step of engagement. His own trauma, which he had a lot of childhood trauma, would just come out in all of these very mean, manipulative ways.
Right.
Yeah. And I would just be shocked by it. And I would be just kind of deer in the headlights. Like, I'm not understanding why this is happening. Let me prove to you how much I'm a good person. And I just got caught in that position of thinking, I can get him to know that I'm a good person and he can stop acting out his trauma on me. And, within 5 years we had 2 children, and it was everything was escalating worse and worse over those periods of time. And it became very clear to me that psychologically and physically, I was probably not going to make it out of there alive if I didn't leave him soon. Mm-hmm. I just was getting crazier, and I knew the stress and the constant roller coaster and the constant negative emotional abuse towards me was just overwhelming. Overwhelming, and I did not have the support I needed to get out of there sooner. But I look back now and I think, my God, I made it out with a 1.5 and a 2.5-year-old. And how amazing was that?
Yeah, that is amazing. And it's very brave of you, because a lot of people stay longer because, wait, these children are so little, we'll just wait it out, and they endure more and more pain and become less and less of themselves.
Right. And I guess for me, it was like his treatment of me was so horrible. But when I saw it starting to be with the kids, I was like, oh no, I cannot tolerate that. Mm-hmm. And of course, leaving didn't mean it got better. Right. It got crazier. I had to fight him in court for 12 years on and off, constantly around his inability to be a safe parent. Everybody in the judicial system telling me, you know, you want to be nice to this person and help him be a good dad, because they couldn't see how crazy and really dangerous he was. He was dangerous, mm-hmm. you know? And it took me years to recover my sense of self and to understand how I ended up in that situation and what I needed to grow and learn about myself in order to not get back into anything like that. It was a tremendous life experience.
I look at all of the crap and everything that has happened to me as a blessing now. You know, 2 years ago, if you asked me, no. But now it's like all the work I've done on myself to understand my childhood trauma, to understand my people pleasing, my fear of abandonment, which makes me stay, my need to make them happy, all of that, and never taking care of me. So right. I just look at it and go, oh my God, I am so happy to be alive now and to have this chance and just to really help others. And that's why I love having this channel and bringing people like you into everyone's living room, because we're going to talk about today is, as a professional and a business person, male or female, you end up with a dual life. When you are in this battle for your life, you're divorcing, or you're in a situation where you're not divorcing and you're with this person that's beating you down, how do you put on your business suit and go out there and pretend like everything's okay?
Well, it's not healthy, right? But at the time, it feels like the greatest escape. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I would leave to go do sessions with people and go focus on them and their lives, that was like a lifesaver for me. Mm-hmm. Even yeah. though I knew I was going to still have to face it when I went home, right? Or I knew that he was watching the kids and there wasn't, you know, it wasn't clear whether or not that was a good idea at that point. Nothing was ever really great and okay. But when you had that moment to split off and focus on other people at work or just work itself, it felt like a relief. Like, this is a place I feel competent. This is a place I know I'm good. I can be of service to people. And, you know, that I think almost is a helpful thing to a certain point, but then it can become this barrier to, let me just keep doing that and work more and more and more. And that's what's going to help me deal with staying with this person.
It's an escape.
Yeah.
It's just another place. So some people turn to alcohol, some people turn to their jobs just to get away from the cray cray.
Totally. And especially if you're successful at what you do, it can become this super fabulous escape because it feels so productive and you're making money and you're helping people. And so it doesn't look like it's the negative thing, right? Uh-huh. You tell yourself this is a good thing. Yeah. Meanwhile, you know, your body is getting worn down. The relationship is getting more toxic. You know, it's catching up with you in your own mental well-being, and it's going to pay its price pretty soon in some way.
And do you want to share with the audience, you don't have to, how your body paid the price?
Well, I paid the price in many ways. I mean, at the time when I had the babies, I was so stressed out already in that relationship. I had horrible perinatal mood disorder where I had, you know, like people call it postpartum depression. Well, I had such bad anxiety and PTSD after the babies were born because of how unstable and unhealthy the relationship was. Mm-hmm. And I don't, you know, and then to try and leave him and his behavior during that process of the divorce was the scariest thing I've ever been through. I had to get restraining orders. He was breaking in my house. He was calling and harassing me. He was threatening me in many different ways. And I had PTSD. So that was a huge price that I had to figure out how to recover from and get the help. And then physically, I was working on my health and well-being for many years, thinking, okay, I'm handling the inflammation. I'm handling almost being diabetic. I'm handling the depression and anxiety still that I'm managing. And when I thought I'm doing pretty good, I got ovarian cancer. And I thought, why now? Like, it would have made sense 15 years ago. And I realized, yeah, you've been in that crisis still. And now your body is saying, here, now we need to get rid of this stress. Uh-huh. And I was very lucky because we caught it early. Otherwise, it just would have killed me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the thing we don't realize is we're sort of like, I'll get to it. I'll leave. You know, at some point I will make the break.
Right.
And don't see the price we're already paying.
Right.
Because exactly. It could be hidden. It could be the hidden cancer in your body, right? Or the hidden tumor in your brain from all of the stress.
Absolutely. That there's so much evidence to prove how trauma affects us because we're masking it. We're just sitting there going, okay, I'm okay. And again, you're fighting each battle. Each day you're like, okay, I got through this. I got through that trauma. Okay, he's doing this. I got through the police. I got through this. So you're not, you might be eating well, or you might be taking care of yourself, but ultimately your body is inside holding on to that. And it has to get out eventually. So sometimes it comes in the form of back pain or disease. Mm-hmm. And thank you for sharing that, because a lot of people don't realize how dangerous it is to stay, because your body is going to pay that price. And whether right. you look haggard and old when you're, you know, old because you've lived this horrible, unhappy life, or your body acts out and turns into something that needs to be fixed.
So. Yes. And I've even seen it a lot with clients that I worked with who were in this situation, and they would have, you know, suddenly these near death accidents, you know, in their car. You know, it's sort of like we think we can just keep hiding from what's happening because it feels way too scary to face it. And yet it's slowly killing us. Mm-hmm. So it's like, do we do something now, or do we wait for the near-death car accident and wake up and realize, yes, it seems scary. The unknown seems scarier than staying with your narcissist.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is, the unknown, you have choices.
Yeah.
Living with your narcissist, all you know is what you already been doing, and there's hardly any choice.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, there's a choice, pain or torture.
Right. Right.
It's like, okay, well, which one do we like? Door number one, door number two.
Exactly.
It's always a challenge. And let's get back to the women thing, because I was with a client friend last weekend and she used the menu. So I'm going to use this and then you can talk in professional words about it. But she used a book. It was our menu. And she said, every day I take my feelings and I put them in the book and I put it on the shelf and I go to work. And I feel like I'm wearing two different masks. I don't want to be vulnerable at work. I don't want them to know that I'm struggling with this, because I would be less professional at that and could lose my job. But at the same time, I'm like, I get home and I'm like this, I've got all this stuff inside of me. And so how does someone juggle that?
Well, so let's say what that's called when we compartmentalize a part of our life, mm-hmm. right? Which is a natural thing to do if you're in an abusive relationship. But then to know that it never really stays in that little compartment, right? It's always bleeding over. And that is the scary part. And that's why I think the sooner we can get some advocates on our side, you know, a coach or a therapist, that we can have a safe place to start addressing what's happening, the better, mm-hmm. because it's eventually gonna blow, right? Like we're talking about the pressure that's built up.
Right.
And it can be very successful. That's the frightening thing, is we project onto people who look successful and they look like they have it together, and we put this expectation like, wow, you have it all together. You must be so happy. You must have the perfect marriage and the perfect family. And that even adds to that pressure that then we put on ourselves. And it keeps us in that box of like, oh, well, people need me to keep acting like I'm perfect. And if I start talking to somebody about how things are not perfect, I'm going to crumble, right? And again, it's sort of like, well, are you going to do that now or later? Are you going to help yourself get real now? Or are you going to wait till the shit really hits the fan?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, because it will. And so when you're at work, I think it is tricky because if you're in an environment that's not supportive, you do need to keep it together. However, a lot of my clients worked in situations where they thought nobody would ever care or be supportive. And they actually found that with certain people, they were able to share little bits and kind of see if there's trust. And they actually ended up getting a lot of support and being able to even be supported by their bosses around getting the help they needed. So it's sort of like, is it worth seeing if it's possible in very small doses and see if something at work could be different? And if not, then you just cultivate that support outside of work. But not having support anywhere is just a bad idea, right?
It really is, yeah. And it's also about getting the right support.
Yes.
So, what I loved about you as a psychiatrist, I get those mixed up, is that your story helped you, empowered you to help survivors. Yes. And so often, you know, again, you said if you weren't living it, you wouldn't have had that and that insight to help people and guide them. And I'm not saying that we need to look out for victim. It's not like you put a stamp on your head. I'm a victim survivor, you know, therapist, coach, whatever. But I do think that that understanding of what the depth of the horror that you're going through is really important. A lot of people have been arrested, myself included, by their narcissists. And you're sitting there, you're fighting a battle. Even the divorced people, it's a horrible thing. And if you're hiding that at work and feeling like you've got this dual personality going,
right.
I do think that it might be helpful to reach out. And again, how do they know if it's a safe person at work?
Right. Well, that's why I said you'd want to start with sharing maybe a small piece, just like, you know, things are kind of rough at home. And then you kind of see how that person really responds. Do they just kind of ignore you, or do they ask more? Do they end up telling somebody about it? I mean, you have to really move slowly with that. But what came up for me when you were saying that, Tracy, is that idea that the thing about an abusive situation is it stays powerful because we feel ashamed and we don't want to share it. And that's what keeps it harder and harder to get help and get resources. And so when I'm working with families around this, I'm usually saying, like, you know, if you have kids, we want to get a counselor on board. You know, we want to have you with a counselor. We want to have the teachers maybe knowing that there's difficulties going on at home, not to set up any judgment, but just to have people paying attention, because that's the kind of supportive, I want to say, kind of documentation of other people's reality of this, that supports you when you're going to go and try and address it for safety issues or divorce issues. And the judicial system is very uneducated about mental health issues. Mm-hmm. And I would say the majority of these huge cases that, you know, where divorces go on for years and years, is usually there's a narcissist involved who's not willing to let go until they get their way. And that's a whole nother discussion. But the point is that you think you're safer not sharing it, but you're actually safer to start sharing it with safe people.
Yeah. And what I have found in my life was that there were unsafe people. There were people that I considered my best friends. And when I shared it, they were, you know, victim blaming. Well, why did you stay? You didn't have to stay. You know, why did this happen? Or, you know, they're so busy smearing us to our friends and our family that it's very often hard for a survivor to, you know, tell someone that something's going wrong, because that person might have, like the next door neighbor, might have already heard that you have mental problems or something like that, you know. Right. And you're just like, so if you figure out who the safe people are,
right,
and know that sometimes you're going to lose people in your life because
most definitely
they're going to weed out that they really weren't that supportive, because a real friend helps you when you're down. They might not understand it because they have the perfect marriage, but it's a lot more than that. It's really just finding the right niche.
It's true. I mean, even like you said, with therapists, I was so nervous when I was searching for therapists, when we were in the second round of child custody issues, because their dad was becoming abusive at visits again. And I was like, okay, I have been through this system. Nobody really gets what he is doing and how he's behaving. He lies. He tells them, basically, I'm the abuser. You know, they don't seem to know anything about, you know, anything. So it was really terrifying. And so I was very suspicious. And we fortunately came across a therapist who worked with the kids regarding visitation. And this man, and I even called him and I was like, you know, I'm really nervous. You're not getting this. And he's like, Kate, I get it. I see it. And I don't think the kids should have to go if they don't want to go. And I was like, oh my God, like such relief. But I'm going to say that there's really great therapists out there who do not know fully what living with and being under the thumb of a narcissist really means. They just don't, because they read it in a book, but they haven't actually been through it.
Right.
And so unfortunately, in this case, you really do want somebody who has either worked with it a lot, mm-hmm. you know, or they've been through it themselves.
Right. And that's the key. I think that that is a very big help to finding the right source of help.
Yes.
Let's see. Let's ask you about, I love having this, like, it's sort of like my own therapy session. So in work, let's go back to that. What advice can you give people that are going through this kind of hell? Besides getting support wherever they can, is there, you know, some kind of mental, like, preparedness that they can do to get out the door and go to that job when they're so traumatized at home?
Yeah, I would, again, I'm imagining just because how I felt, it was harder going back home. Mm-hmm. But I see what you're saying. Like, how do you put on the layers of the I'm okay to get to work? Mm-hmm. And so part of that, I think, has to do with us recognizing that even though we're struggling and we feel victimized, we're not a bad person, and we still have our skills and we still have our gifts to share with people, and we're good at our job. And like, that's, we want to hold on to that, that even though we're having this experience, it's not all of us. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing when we leave from work to go back home. It's sort of like, I know I'm capable here, and how do I keep holding on to that when I go home and try one little step to not stay in the fight when the fight starts, or to walk away, or to, just not take it on personally. That's the little steps we can start to take when we're still in the situation, to do a little self-care. Mm-hmm. Even though those can be very difficult when we've been in it for a long time, we're conditioned to take on the pain. Right. So yeah, I don't know if that answered your question, but
oh, it definitely does. I think just you know, that compartmentalizing our thoughts to go, I am good at my job. He might be saying all this stuff about me being a mother and I'm fighting for my life over here, but I'm safe here. And that's the thing that you have to always find is that grounding to right here, right now, I'm safe versus. Right. You know, I find the fear of tomorrow, the fear of the unknown, just it chokes people. And
right.
Knowing that going to work is safe and you've got to be there. And it might be hard at first, but I think that ultimately, like you said, it can be your salvation, because you're starting to have this glimmer where people respect you, they listen to you, they want to hear your voice, and you're not getting that here. So I think it's an important step to help guide the way that you think about yourself, because you end up crushed. Mm-hmm. And the idea is not to take that everywhere, but right. Again, I don't want to leave it on the shelf. I don't want to ignore it, but right. You know, just to know in yourself, your true power, that you're okay.
Right.
Yeah.
And it is tricky because, you know, when we're in the crisis still, we don't really have the energy and capability to start doing a whole lot of change, because we have to feel safe. Mm-hmm. And in general, when you're in that situation living with that person, you don't feel safe. So starting to create safe places, whether it's at work or in a therapist's office or a coach's office, we start to have a place that we have a little space. Mm-hmm. To work with that safety and start nurturing and supporting ourselves to build up the capacity to know it's possible to do it different, to leave. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what you said too, struck me also, the idea of staying in the present. You know, when I knew that when I said, this is it, we've decided this is over. And then he flipped it and said, you know, no, this is you kicking me out and I can't be a dad to my children. I was like, you can't stop. Just keep going. And we don't know what the future is going to bring. And, you know, when everything started to get worse, I was like, this doesn't mean it's going to last forever. Just one step and then the next step, because every day you will be able to face that situation, because you've been facing a really intolerable, absolutely horrendous situation. Mm-hmm. And even though it seems scarier, because it's a new, different, horrendous thing, we're quite strong.
Yeah.
You know, as victims of this narcissistic abuse, we're incredibly strong. Mm-hmm. And we have to know that we have what it takes to take those steps and get out. But it's only one step at a time, and staying in the present and not going into the future fear is super important, right? It's all that trauma piece. Mm-hmm. I mean, I when he was like, I'm going to, you know, put a bullet through your head, I would be home at night going, he's probably out there with his gun. He's probably going to shoot me in the head. And I was like, you need to stop that. You need to close the blinds. You cannot do that to yourself anymore. Mm-hmm. No matter how much you might be worried about that, that is not okay.
Yeah.
Right? And I had to claim my right to calm my nervous system, to be able to get my sleep and take care of my kids.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think another part too, as you were talking, I had a little aha moment, is that roller coaster that we're on and we're taking one step at a time, there's going to be a little bit where we go backwards.
And oh yeah.
Not to judge yourself, because that's part of the process.
Oh yes. You know,
it's not that you're falling backwards or you're falling back into a dark hole and you're going to curl up in a ball, but you need to give yourself a break and say, look how far I've come.
Right.
Where I am, and the fear of caring for yourself or providing for your family is a very big thing.
Yes.
But in the end, it's freedom from the torture that you've been living, and it's better for your children. Right. You know, a lot of people don't think how this is impacting their children as they watch mommy get hit or they watch the yelling and the screaming. Mm-hmm. It affects you, and we don't want that for our children. And so, I remember we used to watch and listen to my mom and dad fighting, and didn't think it affected me. I thought it affected my sisters, but the reality is it made me a codependent at people pleasing, right. Don't rock the boat, which made me pick the wrong people. So right. We don't want that for our children.
Right. Right. Yeah. And the thing about going back, you know, like that it is like two steps forward, one step back, because you're the trauma bond that we create with our abuser, even if we're, you know, very torn in all the ways we feel about them, there is something that gets created there that makes it very difficult to fully let go. and it takes time. Even if, like, you know, we were in living in different houses and it would be this difficult pull. I would feel like, oh, he's the father of my children. I want to have a family, right? Like, it just takes so much longer time than we want it, but it's worth every step mm-hmm. because it is about reclaiming your life and your ability to be you, mm-hmm. which we cannot be when we're in a narcissistic relationship.
No, we can't. And they'll get to that point. And you know, just hold on to yourself, everybody, because it's a roller coaster, but you're not a failure because you were pushed backwards a little bit. Just take a smaller step forward next time.
Yep. Definitely. And keep patting yourself on the back because any tiny little step, any tiny new decision to take care of you instead of pleasing is a huge step. We're celebrating.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So you do therapy. Do you do therapy on Skype or anything so that if any of our people out there are interested in getting some help from you, do you do it online?
So I'm doing what I'm calling coaching only because I'm a psychologist, so I bring all of that in, but like I'm not working with insurance and everything anymore. So I do it on Skype. I work with people all over the world and I am available for people to work with me and decide what is going to be the best way. I'm in the process of creating a new program that is like where you could be more learning a lot of different steps as you go. But a lot of people just need that one-to-one time, right? To really build their sense of self back and know that it's possible and really build your sense of security in being you.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And you're writing a book.
Yes, I wrote a book about working with anxiety, which was kind of like it was about all the ways that I've worked with people over the 30 years. It brings in a lot of the work with the mental work and getting more embodied and knowing what your feelings and needs and boundaries are. And also some spiritual pieces of how do we get to feel more resourced. So that book is actually on Amazon right now. It's called Fear Less, The Art of Using Anxiety to Your Advantage. And it's a way of working with how anxiety is informing us. And it, rather than us wanting to just get it away, it's actually helping us see where things are not okay, right?
Like very much like intuition. Like your intuition is telling you something's wrong, but yeah. We don't listen. You know, we're like, oh, yeah.
Right. And if I had listened to my anxiety early on in the relationship, I maybe wouldn't have ended up making that decision, right? That part of me that did feel like this is off. What's going on, right? Mm-hmm. But part of that practicing, that listening. And that book's available on Amazon. I'd love to share it with your viewers too. I could give them a free copy if they wanted to reach me.
Oh, wow. That is so sweet. I will put the link to your site down below and everybody can reach out to her. And thank you so much for being with us today because I think we need to take this to a new level and get the people the help that they need to really move to the next level because you can't do that alone, guys.
Yeah.
I am like on the over top of doing research. And my therapist the other day said, stop reading that stuff, Tracy. And I'm like, but it's for my new job.
Right.
He's like, no. Just live for a little while. And I was like, okay. But it doesn't mean that we don't want help. And it's stronger. It makes you stronger to take care of yourself and to get professional help like you. So
it's true. I mean, I think it's really almost near impossible to do on your own because mm-hmm. we wouldn't have the reality check that we need. Like, you know, right. To say you're doing the right thing for yourself, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So thank you so much. And I'll put the link down below and anybody you just heard her offer, she's willing to send you a copy of her book. So, or the PDF, I'm assuming.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. So thank you so much for joining us and we'll have you back again. All right.
Great. Thanks, Tracy.
Thank you.